Well, hey, good to have you here this evening. We're glad that you came. We're involved in a series entitled, What Would You Do or What Should You Do When? And tonight we're going to talk about what should you do when somebody's out to get you. I want to talk to you tonight about what you do when you got somebody out to get you. So I've got three principles I want to share with you, and I hope you'll write them down because I promise you, if you're not having to use them now, you will. Before it's over, you will. That's just the way it works. Okay, ready? For the first principle, what I want you to do is take a Bible, and if you didn't bring one, use our copy. It's on the back of the seat in front of you. And let's turn to to Matthew chapter 5, page 684. Page 684 in our copy, or Matthew chapter 5 in your copy. Okay? Now, by the way, while you're turning, let me say, next week we're going to talk about what should you do, what should I do as a Christian when God makes no sense. That's what we're going to talk about next week. I mean, when just the way things are going, it just makes absolutely no sense, and you can't figure out why in the world is God doing this to me? Next week. Okay. Now, this week, what to do when somebody's after you? I've got three quick principles for you. Here's the first one. It's fine right here in Matthew chapter 5. Principle number one is go make it right. Look what Jesus said, Matthew chapter 5, and look at verse 23. Jesus said, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift in front of the altar. Forget about worshiping me. Go first and be reconciled to your brother, and then come on back and offer your gift. The first principle here that God gives us is this. If somebody is out to get you, go first to them. You take the initiative and find out, hey, is there something I did wrong? Did I hurt you? Did I embarrass you? Did I cause you to lose face? Did I do something awful that you're upset about that I need to make right? You know, lots of times the reason that somebody's out to get us, they may not come right out and admit it, and we might not be able to pin it down exactly, but a lot of times the reason that we feel people are out to get us is we've done something or said something or acted in some way that has really just hurt somebody or has offended somebody or has just, you know, kind of bent their nose out of shape or they lost face or they feel like you shafted them first. You may not feel you did, but they feel that way. And a lot of times, a simple conversation can settle the whole problem. But somebody's got to take the initiative, and God says it ought to be you. If you come to the altar and you're even aware somebody else has something against you, forget about worshiping. It's more important to God to go get it straight with your brother. That means some of us ought not be in church tonight. Some of us should have, instead of coming here, gone to see somebody or called somebody because we know somebody has something against us, and God said, I'm more concerned that you go get that right than I am that you come and go to church. Now, don't leave right this minute. We'll let you do it when you leave, all right? We'll give you 20 minutes and you can go, but you ought to go make that phone call. This is really important to God. You know, when I was in high school, I had my share of problems. I wasn't exactly a very functional person. Still not. A lot of people don't think. But anyway, I had a lot of bad relationships and friendships in high school. And I'll never forget one time there was this one guy who was just really bent on just hurting me. He'd wait for me after school. I'd have to sneak out of different doors, you know, to get on the bus. Because if I happened to go out the door where he was, I'd get my face bashed in. And, I went to my dad one time. I probably don't remember three significant, meaningful conversations with my father in my whole life. This is one of them. It's kind of funny. I was about 16 years old, and I went to my dad. He was sitting down watching television after he'd come home from work, which is, you know, world without end, amen. That's what he did. And so I went to him and I said, Dad, I got this problem, and this guy's trying to beat me up every day after school, and I don't know what to do. And he actually gave me good advice. Can you imagine that? Your dad actually gave you good advice. He actually said, well, did you do anything to make him mad? And I'm like, I don't know. He said, well, why don't you go ask him? Oh, well, now there's a novel idea. Oh, okay. You think that'll work? He said, well, what's the worst that can happen? He's already out to beat you up. What's the worst that can happen? Oh, okay, well, that's a good point. You know. So I actually went and talked to this guy and I said, hey, look, I know you're out to beat me up every day. I'm just curious. Is there any chance I've done something to upset you? And he said, yeah. And he began telling me about something I had said in class that just really embarrassed him, put him down. I mean, he wasn't exactly a rocket scientist, if you understand what I'm saying. And I did something in class that just embarrassed him, made him feel like an ignoramus and a dumbbell. And he was carrying that for months against me. Well, my dad said, if he tells you something, just tell him you're sorry. There's another novel idea. So I said, hey, man, I didn't mean to do that. You know, that's not what I really apologize and I'm sorry. Do you know that guy became one of my best friends the rest of the time we were in high school? I mean, there were other people who wanted to beat me up. And he'd stand in the way and not let them beat me up. It's true. But he became one of my best friends. And it was all settled by simply me taking the initiative to go and say, hey, did I do something to really make you mad? If so, I'm willing to try to make it right. The first principle, if somebody's out to get you, is go to them and find out. Just humble yourself and go find out, did I do something to really upset you? And if I did, I want to make it right. Tell me, what can I do to make it right? And I'll do it. Now, that doesn't always fix the problem. I mean, I've tried that in other situations where it didn't fix the problem. Sometimes there are people who, even though you may go to them like that, for whatever reason, they don't like your face and they just want to hate you. I mean, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to it. They just don't like you, period. And there's not one thing you can do to make them like you, period. And you can say you're sorry all you want, they're not going to like you. And there's nothing you can do about it. So what do you do in that situation? Well, I got another principle for you. God does anyway. Flip over, if you would, to Romans chapter 12. If you're using our copy of the Bible, it's page 804. Romans chapter 12, page 804. And look at the end of the chapter. Romans chapter 12. And I want you to look at verse 18 with me. Now, it's interesting, you know, David had one of these situations, the guy in the Old Testament, didn't he? Remember David and King Saul? Man, no matter what that guy tried, Saul just didn't like him. Saul was jealous of him. Saul was scared of him. Saul didn't want him around. And David, you know, he tried everything he could think of. You know, he'd apologize and he'd go to see Saul and he'd do nice things for him. You know, and he'd send him cupcakes and he'd do everything he could to Saul. And Saul just wasn't interested. You know, David even wrote about it. He said in Psalm 120, I was for peace, but they were for war every time I spoke. In other words, no matter what I said, it wasn't right. I wanted peace, but they wanted war, and there was nothing I could do about it. So what do you do in that situation? Here's principle number two, and that is be at peace in your own heart when it comes to how you feel about that person. Be at peace in your own heart regarding how you feel about them. Maybe you can't bring them to the point that they're at peace with how they feel about you, but you can get to the place where before God you're at peace with how you feel about them. In other words, when their face comes up on the screen, your heart's in neutral. I mean, there's no bitterness, no hatred, no anger, no desire for revenge. You're just in neutral. Now look, watch God tell you this here. Romans chapter 12 and look at verse 18. Here's what it says. It says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. You know, the one thing I love about God is that he's a realist. Don't you love that about God? God doesn't live in some, you know, rose-colored glass world or in some ivory tower. God says, look, if it's possible, it's not always possible. He understands that. It takes two to tango. It takes two to make peace. And you're not always going to be able to achieve that. As much as possible, live at peace with all people. But if you can't create a reconciliation, a peace between you and somebody else, at least God says, as far as it depends on you, as far as your side of things is concerned, you be at peace with everybody. I've had friends say to me, you know, if I can't bring a peaceful resolution to every relationship in my life, I'm sure God's not happy with me. Wrong. Not true. Because God can't hold you responsible for what this other person feels, for what this other person thinks. That's not your responsibility. And there are relationships that you may be involved in where you cannot bring peace and reconciliation to them, and it doesn't mean you're displeasing to God at all. God says in a relationship like that, you just make sure that as far as your heart is concerned, things are at peace. And that's as much as you can do. If you tried and you can't bring peace to it, then you be at peace, and that's all I can ask from you, God says. That's all I can ask. Friends, I got people all over Northern Virginia who don't like me. I mean, it's true. Some of it's because of the way I drive, but most of it is because... Most of it's because I made some decision or we had to take some stand that somebody didn't agree with and they got upset about it and I tried to work it out with them, but they didn't want to work it out and they walked out of McLean Bible Church or whatever and they're upset. And if you ask them, they'll tell you I'm a guy with a big old eyeball in the middle of my head and horns coming out the side of my head and got a big old tail and a pitchfork, and they'll tell you all kinds of awful things. Well, I mean, I don't know what else to do to try to reconcile with these people. And so I've just accepted the fact that, hey, there are going to be people in life that don't like you. There are going to be people in life that don't want to get along with you. But as much as it depends on me, when their faces come up on my screen, I've got to be in neutral. No anger, no animosity, no hatred, no ill will. I'm just in neutral. I'm fine. And if they were ever to come to me and say, could we make this right? I'd be the first one to say, you bet. You understand what I'm saying? If you've got somebody in your life that you just cannot make things right with, it does not mean you're displeasing to God. Just make sure in your own heart that things are right and clean before God, because there are going to be those people. When I worked at Giant Food, I had the assistant manager at the store where I worked was a little shrimpy guy named Roger. And we started off fine. I swear to this day, I do not know what happened in our relationship. I was a cashier. He was the assistant manager. He was my boss. We started off fine. We got along great. My first performance review, he gave me 100. Whoa, that was awesome. I asked for a raise, but he wouldn't give me one. But anyway, I did get 100 on the performance review. And then something happened, and to this day, I don't know what, but little by little, our relationship started going downhill quick. Till it got to the point where this guy was just a mortal enemy and I couldn't do anything to make it right. I would go to other cashiers. I went to one of the other system managers. I said, what did I do? I mean, does he ever say anything? Does he ever tell you why he can't stand me? Nope, he just can't stand you. Everybody in the store knew he couldn't stand me. We would write down, you know, requests for what you wanted for next week's schedule. You were allowed to do that. If you wanted Friday night off to go somewhere or Saturday morning off, you'd write it down on the schedule, and they tried to honor that, except for me. I learned, this is really true. I used to write down, I want Saturday night off. I got tickets to the Bullets game with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. He'd schedule me on Saturday night. This is true, on purpose, you know. So what I began doing is writing down, I want Saturday morning off. He'd schedule me on Saturday morning. Then I got Saturday night off to go to the game. How about that? But anyway, that's how bad it was. Hey, I'm not completely stupid. That's how bad it was. You know, when I left Giant Food, I had never figured out a way to get along with this guy. But I had no ill will towards him. I really didn't. I had worked it through with God to the point that I could say, hey, I'm cool with him. Right now, I don't know if I ever got fired here. I could go back to Giant because he wrote me up once and put it in my permanent file. What I'd done was I worked there in the days where you used to have to press the buttons, you know, and hit the buttons. Any of you people old enough to remember where you had to push buttons in a supermarket? Well, okay, maybe some of you. But anyway, and so we had, you know, a column for the, you know, the cents, two columns for, you know, the dimes and the pennies. And then we had dollars and tens of dollars. And then we had the one column that had hundreds of dollars. Why they would put those in a cash register, you know, $100 to $900 on this register? Well, who would ever have a food item that you had $100 on it? So they had a little cover they placed on top of it, you know, a little plastic cover, so you couldn't accidentally hit it. Well, one time when it was kind of slow, I sneaked up to this one cashier, and I pulled up her little thing and pushed the $100 thing and put it down. So when she rang in how much the customer gave her, she rang in $100 more than the customer really gave her. And she looked at it and went, oh, and gave him the $100 plus what he was supposed to get. So I got in a lot of trouble for that. And he wrote me up and put it in my permanent folder. But that we were already enemies by then. That isn't what did it. I said, it was just a joke. He said, yeah, it was a joke. So, but anyway, folks, where are we? Have we completely lost this? Where are we? Well, we're principle number two. Principle number two is, hey, if somebody's got something against you and you can't work it out, and that happens in life, what God expects from you and me is we're at peace. We're okay. And if we go to our grave not being able to work it out, well, if they want to, we're willing to. We're okay. Now, third and finally, and here comes the hardest one. I'm telling you ahead of time. This is the hardest one. Principle number three is not just try to go make it right and not just be at peace in your own heart, but principle number three is take the high road. Take the high road. Now, what do you mean by that? Well, look at the rest of Romans 12 here. Look at verse 19. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. So on the contrary, verse 20, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. And in doing this, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Now look at verse 21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You know what God's saying here? God is saying, if somebody's out to get you and you can't resolve it and you're at peace, but they're still coming like a T-1000 after you, he wants you to take the high road. He doesn't want you to lower yourself to their level. He doesn't want you to cheapen yourself to go down and fight on the level that they're coming at you. He wants you to keep entrusting it to him, and you take the high road. You return good for evil. Now, this is not natural. I've never met a human being in my whole life who's naturally inclined when somebody does something nasty to them to do something nice back. Now, maybe you're that way, and if you're that way, then you're a saint. You come up, and we'll canonize you right after the service. But I never met anybody that's like that. I mean, all you have to do is watch how people drive on the Beltway, right? I had a guy who about run me off the Beltway a couple months ago, and I went after him. I mean, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that, but I mean, the guy almost ran me into the barricade, so I speeded up, and I was right after him, put my bright lights on right behind him, and then I said, what are you doing? Are you out of your mind? You're a pastor. Pastors don't do this. So I just pulled in the next lane and went, meow, and just passed him and gave him one of those looks when you go by, you know. Well, hey, guys, tell me the truth now. Isn't that how all of us feel when somebody does something to you, man? That is the human nature. Do it to me? All right. Well, you watch, man. I'm coming back at you. And whether it's a friend at school where we say, all right, just give me the slightest opportunity. All right, they want to do that to me. And when I get the chance to embarrass them, I'm going to do it. Or somebody at work, and you say, all right, as soon as they need something for that project and the whole thing's riding on my little part, you watch what happens, okay? Or a teacher at school, you say, well, you just wait till they pass around that little evaluation form at the end of the course. Man, I'm going to sink his tenure once and for all. Or, hey, you know, or your mother or your father, well, when they get old enough, it's only a question of which nursing home, you know. Guys, let's be honest. This is the hard part. Because what God says here is, no, that's not how you're going to do it. That's cheapening yourself. That's lowering yourself. Don't you go down and do what they're doing back to you. Don't do that to yourself. Don't go down, he says here in the last verse, and be overcome by evil so that people can't tell any difference between you and them. No, don't do that. He says, overcome their evil by doing good. You say, but Lon, I don't really want to do that because I want them to get it back. I want them to suffer back. I want some judgment. I want some justice. Where's justice if I do this? There's no justice. Oh, wait a minute. You got to read it all. It says, look up above, do not take your own revenge. You don't need to. But leave room for God's revenge. For God said, it's mine to avenge. I will repay. Do you see that? He didn't say I might. But he said, if there is something to repay, I will repay. I see every word they say about you. I see everything they do behind your back. I see every conversation they carry on. I understand every way they've ever tried to stab you in the back. I see every little scheme and every little bit of sabotage. I see it all. And hey, when I'm ready, I will repay. Don't you lower yourself and try to do it. You leave it to me. I'll take care of it. Oh, there'll be justice, folks. Trust me, there'll be justice. It's just that God doesn't want you dispensing justice. Justice is only safe in the hands of a holy God. It's very dangerous in our hands. God's the only one that I trust to dispense justice. Because I'm too directed by the way I feel about things, and I see everything from my point of view, and gosh, maybe my point of view is not totally accurate. I'll leave it with God. They say, well, Lon, how does God do that? I mean, you know, does he just kind of come down and whack on people? Or does he, you know, have somebody sideswipe their car? I mean, how does God do this kind of stuff? Well, there's a very interesting passage in the Old Testament that comments to this, and it's in Psalm 7. Will you turn back there with me? It's page 385 if you're using our copy of the Bible, Psalm 7. And here's what it says. Psalm 7, page 385. And look at verse 15. Psalm 7, verse 15. Here's what God says. The person who digs a hole and scoops it out for somebody else to fall in, for you to fall in, they will fall into the pit they made. Now look what else he says. Next verse, verse 16. And the trouble that that person causes will recoil on his own head. His violence will come down on he himself. Now who's going to make sure that happens? God says, I am. You know, God is the ultimate black belt in judo. And, you know, the genius of judo, actually, I have a belt in judo. I got it when I was in college. I don't think it'll fit around me anymore, but I got it when I was in college. And I actually have a belt in judo. And the way judo works is you take advantage of the momentum of your enemy and use it against him. If he moves forward, then you throw him that way. If he moves backwards, you throw him backwards. If he wants to go sideways, you throw him sideways. You let him provide the momentum, and all you do is take advantage of his momentum and flip him or her. That's the art of judo. God is the ultimate black belt. And do you understand what he's saying in these verses? He says, let this person scheme. Let them do whatever they want. Let them cook up all their cockamamie schemes to hurt you and injure you as my child. And here's what I'll do. I'll take the very scheme they've cooked up, and I'll catch them in their own scheme. I'll turn it right back on their own head. That's God's promise. Man, I'll tell you, a great example of that in the Old Testament is Haman. You remember Haman, the story of Passover? I'll give it to you real quick. Haman was this guy in Persia. Wasn't a nice guy at all. And he got real bent out of shape at this guy named Mordecai. Mordecai was a Jewish guy who wouldn't bow down to him when he came out. Mordecai's niece was the queen, Queen Esther. And he wouldn't bow down to him, and Haman just hated this guy. I mean, he was one of these people that, you know, there was nothing Mordecai could do right. And finally, kind of to cut to the chase, he got enough power that he felt he could really not only nail Mordecai, but he could nail the entire race, the whole Jewish race that Mordecai represented. And so as his first step, he decided to build a big old gallows to hang Mordecai on. He built it 75 feet high, bigger than any gallows in the whole city. And his plan was to hang Mordecai on it. And the night that he went in to ask for Mordecai to be hung, you have to read the story. The king had been up all night the night before and had read in the annals of the kingdom that Mordecai had done something to save the king's life. And when he came back out, instead of having permission to kill Mordecai, he was given the instruction to lead Mordecai in a big old parade through the city and proclaim, "This is the man the king loves. This is the man the king loves." He had to lead the parade. Then, before it was over, the next day, the king misunderstood Haman and thought Haman was after his wife and hung him on the gallows he built for Mordecai. So he built the gallows for Mordecai. They hung him on it. Was that judo or what? You got to read the story. It's fabulous. And God does that all the time. And so what he asks us to do is 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. When it says, when Jesus was reviled, he didn't revile back. When Jesus was oppressed, he didn't utter any threats. Listen, but he kept on entrusting himself to God who judges righteously. He said, God, this is between you and that person. I'm not spitting back threats. I'm taking the high road. You deal with them. Does it work? Say, Lon, that doesn't work. I mean, God bless you, preacher people. But that just doesn't work. I mean, we're out in the real world. I mean, it's lock and load out here, Lon. You know, I mean, we don't come to work in a church every day. You know, we go out in the real world and have to deal with this. If I go out there and act like this, they're going to kill me out there. Are you crazy? This doesn't work. Oh, yes, it does. Yeah, it does. I've lived it, and I'm telling you, it works. I'm going to tell you a story in closing tonight that has never been told. This is true. Has never been told publicly before here at McLean Bible Church. And I'm telling you, well, because I like you. So I'll tell you the story. It's a totally true story. But it's never been publicly told. And you're going to hear some facts nobody at McLean Bible Church has ever heard in public. Back in 1991, how many of you were here when we had that big vote of confidence to throw me out of the church? Any of you guys here? Okay. Well, one Sunday morning I walked in and I said, hey, tonight we're going to all come together and we're going to take a vote as to whether or not I stay as the pastor of the church. And if I don't get at least 75% of the vote, then I'm leaving. Now you say, what in the world? You know, I mean, are you out of your mind? You know? No, I wasn't. McLean Bible Church back in those years, right around the late 80s and 1990, was in such horrible shape. I mean, I don't know how to paint you a picture of a nuclear fallout zone, but this is what we had here. We had infighting, bickering. We had power struggles. I mean, this place was an absolute mess. It could not be led. We weren't going anywhere because we were stuck on top dead center. We had so much infighting and bickering. And what led up to that was a situation where for years I had been working with our board of elders. And by the way, today our board of elders is great. I love the board of elders. We're good friends. We get along. They support the staff. And that's part of the reason why this church is doing as well as it's doing. But back then we didn't have that. And there was about half the board that wanted me fired and about the other half who wasn't sure how they felt. I'm not sure I had anybody who was coming out real strong wanting me to stay. But, you know, there were a couple who weren't sure how they felt, but three or four who knew they wanted me to go. And what happened is Jimmy Mitchell, some of you know Jim Mitchell, took over as chairman of the board of elders. And the reason I'm still at this church today is because of Jim Mitchell. And he began forcing us to work through issues. Well, Jimmy and I were meeting every morning. Oh, I'm sorry. We were meeting once a week, every Wednesday morning, for breakfast at McDonald's up on Gallows Road. And there was this one elder on the board who was just hell-bent to get me out of this church. I mean, he made no secret of it. He said, my goal, my agenda is to get you out of this church. He was one of our elders. Nice, huh? And I'd walk through the halls over at Langley High School. This is true. I'm not being paranoid about this. Ask anybody who was here. And he'd be having little conversations with people, and I'd come by, and they'd all stop. You know, the conversation would stop, and they'd give you a big old smile. And I'd walk on, and they'd go back to the conversation. Now, you know, those are not good conversations happening. And there was all kinds of behind-the-scenes scheming and plotting going on. It was nasty, nasty. Well, you say, what did you do about the guy? Well, I didn't know what to do about him. I went to him. I said, what have I done wrong? Well, you know, what can I do to make things right? There wasn't anything. He just did not want me to be pastor of his church. There was nothing I could do. So you say, well, why didn't you throw him off the board? Why didn't you get your troops together? Why didn't you have those little conversations in the hall? Why didn't you kind of work behind the scenes? Why didn't you do a little politicking? Why didn't you do a little scheming? You know, guys, I actually prayed about it, and I really felt God was saying to me, Lon, don't lower yourself to do that. Don't do that. That is cheapening yourself. It is lowering your ministry. Do not do that. If I want you in McLean Bible Church, I'm strong enough to protect you. Do not lower yourself to do that. So I didn't. I didn't do any politicking. I didn't engage in any conversations. I had no strategies. I had no schemes. I just tried to go on preaching the Bible and doing the best I could. It was horrible. I almost had a nervous breakdown in those years. It was horrible. I couldn't sleep at night, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was out walking the neighborhood. I mean, it was just terrible. Well, what happened was, after a number of years of this going on, I mean, this went on 3 or 4 years of just absolute anarchy. And I just kept saying, God, you'll deal with this when you're ready. This is what happened. We were at McDonald's one morning, and Jim Mitchell and I were talking, and Jim said, Lon, what would it take to get you to stay at McLean Bible Church? I said, Jim, the way things are going right now, I wouldn't stay here unless you gave me a contract. I mean, I want a signed contract, because I just don't know who to trust anymore. And Jim said, you know, Lon, I can't give you a signed contract. I mean, I don't have authority to do something like that. Well, in the booth right behind us was a fella with his back towards us who used to come to McLean Bible Church and who was a friend of this elder. He overheard part of this conversation. What he thought he overheard was Jim Mitchell offering me a contract, a secret contract to work at McLean Bible Church. Guys, I'm telling you, this really happened. And he got on the phone and he called up this elder friend of his and he said, do you know what I just overheard in McDonald's? Jim Mitchell, the chairman of the elders, has given Lon a secret contract to work at McLean Bible Church. So you can't fire him. Well, this guy got on the phone. He called around the whole board of elders. He said, this is what Jim Mitchell has done. And he said, tonight, we were meeting every Wednesday night. This was a Tuesday, actually. We were having breakfast the next night. He said, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, we're going in and we're getting Lon. Are you with me? Are you against me? I'm bringing up a motion to have him thrown out as the pastor before this contract gets signed or anything. We got to get him. We got to get him right now. So he said, tomorrow night, I'm bringing up a motion. We're going to vote him out. Are you with me or are you against me? Well, one of these elders that he called was enough of a man of integrity that you know what he did? He got on the phone, called Jim Mitchell up and said, Jim, this is what I heard. Is this true? Did you make a secret contract with Lon? Jim goes, are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? Where did you hear something like that? That's absolutely stupid. Where'd you hear something like that? He said, well, this other elder called me up and told me you had done this. Oh, boy. I've never seen Jim Mitchell upset very often. He's a real sweet guy from Mississippi, just kind of even keel. But man, he was not a happy camper at that moment because he felt his personal integrity had been impugned. And he called me up Wednesday afternoon. I was sitting home in my study and he said, do you know what's going to happen tonight? I said, God only knows what's going to happen tonight. And he told me this story and he said, I'm incensed. You know, this man called my personal integrity into question. Nobody, I am incensed. I said, well, Jim, you know, he's been calling my integrity into question for years. I didn't see you that incensed about it when he was doing it to me. He said, he didn't know what to say, but he said, nobody does that to my integrity. He said, maybe I should have been more incensed. So he said, tonight, when he walks in that meeting, he's resigning from the Board of Elders tonight, and anybody who's with him is resigning. He said, that's what's happening tonight. So I went to the board meeting. I'm sitting there. Now get the picture. This guy's coming in to bring up a motion to fire me, and Jim's coming in saying, I'm kicking him off. I thought, this is going to be fun. I can't wait to see how this works out. So we're sitting in my office, and in comes this man. And we sit down, we have opening prayer, and he raises his hand. He said, Jim, I got an item of business I want to bring up. It's very important. And Jim says, fine, you can bring it up. But first, I've got an item of business to bring up, and I'm the chairman, so I go first. Okay. And he turns to this guy, and he says, did you say? Now, remember, the elder who had called Jim on the phone was sitting in the room. He said, did you say to him that I made a secret contract with Lon? This guy's like, you did. Jim said, and what proof do you have of that? He said, well, I had a guy overheard you guys talking to McDonald's, making up the contract. Jimmy turned to me and he said, Lon, do you have a contract with McLean Bible Church? No. Is there any contract? No. Have we even written? No. There's nothing. He turned back and he said, you have impugned my integrity. You have damaged my reputation. You didn't even have the courtesy to call me up and ask me. And you've been spreading rumors and gossip about me. Now, he said, I want your resignation and I want it right now. You're not serving on this board of elders. You don't deserve to be an elder in this church. And the room got about as quiet as this one is. And the guy said, well, now, wait a minute. What about forgiveness? I mean, you know, it's true. He said, we've forgiven Lon all this junk that he's done. What about forgiving me? He said, wait a minute. Lon's never done what you've done. And he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I do forgive you. But you don't deserve to serve on the board, so I forgive you. And now you're resigning. And the guy resigned and never got to bring the motion up to kick me out of the church because he was off the board first. This really happened. And so he came in to get me. And what happened is, God got him. This really happened. And it was over. And that's when we sat in that meeting. One other elder got up and said, well, if he resigns, I resign. Jim said, good. Go. And then Jim turned and said, anybody else want to resign? The four of us just sat there and looked at each other. And Jim said, all right, guys, God has given us our opportunity. Now we're going directly to the congregation and we're going to settle this once and for all. And that's what led up to that big vote back in the early 1991. Nobody's ever heard that story. You're the only group that's ever heard it. I've never told it to any group in McLean Bible Church because it was too close to the events and things were too sensitive years ago. But that is an entirely true story. And so here's the point. The point is I kept backing off and backing off and backing off and saying, God, you'll deal with this man when you're ready. And you know what? The schemes that he was working and all of the rumor and all of the gossip and all the stuff he was doing, did God do Psalm 7 to this guy? Did God turn it right back on his own head and catch him in his very own scheme? And Jim got up at this meeting on Sunday and said, so-and-so is no longer on the board. And the reason he's no longer on the board is because he was gossiping and he was backbiting and he was indulging in behavior that is unbecoming and ungodly, and he forfeited his right to be on the board. I couldn't believe it. I was like, whoa. And you know the neatest part about the whole thing? Is that nobody could look at me and say I did a thing. I never did anything. Nobody could say, well, Lon just outmaneuvered him. Lon just out-schemed him. Lon just out-politicked him. Lon just played dirtier than he... I didn't do anything. I just kept backing off and saying, God, when you're ready, you'll deal with this guy. And God caught him in his own scheme. Don't tell me this doesn't work, friends. It'll work. Now, it won't work in your timetable. I mean, it's not going to happen as fast as you want it to. God's going to wait till he's perfectly ready to deal with that person that's after you. But you trust God. God said, vengeance is mine. I will repay. I'll turn those schemes back on that person's own head. You just take the high road. It's in your own heart. Principle number three. If they keep on coming, folks, just take the high road. Keep acting like a man or a woman of God. And keep believing God is bigger than they are. And whenever God's ready, man, whatever hammer needs to fall, it'll fall. It'll work. Trust me. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, there is nothing harder in the entire world than to respond to somebody that is deliberately, without apology, out to get us. It's not an accidental thing, but it's conscious and it's planned. And Lord, that is just so difficult for us as Christians to deal with and remain men and women of God. But I pray that you would take these principles that we've talked about here and that you would give every one of us here who knows Jesus Christ personally a strategy for dealing with these kind of situations. Lord, make us humble enough, men and women, that we're willing to go see if maybe it's all because we did something to hurt somebody. Make us forgiving enough people that we can go into neutral and really be at peace in our own hearts. And Lord, make us obedient enough people that we can trust you and believe you that you're big enough to take care of defending us. We don't need to lower ourselves in scheme, in politic, in connive, in gossip. We don't need to do that because we have a God who's big enough that he can take care of justice and he can defend us. So, Father, teach us that we can entrust it to you and that you will protect and avenge just the way you said. And may we get to the place that we can take the high road and remain men and women of God in the sight of an onlooking world for your glory and for your reputation. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.